This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Advancing a spending spree. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Wednesday, July 14. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Senate Democrats have agreed to a $3.5 trillion framework for a health care and anti-poverty plan. Tax increases are expected to pay for it.
Thousands of firefighters are now battling more than 60 western wildfires, burning largely unchecked from Alaska to New Mexico.
The U.S. is now averaging more than 23,000 new COVID cases per day, double the recent average, thanks to the highly transmissible Delta variant.
And how Cuba's protests are once again pitting dictators versus democracies.
This is a really unusual amount of unhappiness expressed publicly with this, what is, after all, a 62-year-old dictatorship. And I think that's interesting because it fits into a much broader context, which is a global struggle, really, between authoritarian regimes and democracy that's in full swing right now.
Jerry Seib at the Wall Street Journal on authoritarians with momentum on their side as of late. There's been little relief the past 24 hours from the scores of major wildfires raging almost unchecked across the West. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The unrelenting heat wave and historic drought have fueled more than five dozen blazes, consuming better than 1,500 square miles of mostly timber and brush. But an undetermined number of homes have burned and thousands have been threatened. More than 14,000 wildland firefighters and support personnel were battling the fires as of yesterday afternoon. Meanwhile, AccuWeather says high temperatures will remain in the 90s and 100s through the week. Temperatures will only increase over the weekend and into next week. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The largest fire in the country was incinerating areas of the Fremont-Winnema National Forest in southern Oregon near the California border. The bootleg fire, as it's called, was disrupting service on three power transmissions lines that provide service to California. The Texas Senate has advanced a bill imposing stricter voting rules a day after their Democratic counterparts in the State House fled the state to block passage of the final bill by preventing a quorum. The bill advanced by the Senate yesterday would do things like end two practices that started amid the pandemic. That's drive-through voting and 24-hour voting, reverting now to the pre-COVID rules. It would also ask the people who vote by mail verify their identities. Texas State House GOP leader Jim Murphy.
Make no mistake, this is not about one particular bill. This is political theater by and for Texas Democrats.
President Biden, meanwhile, used a speech in Philadelphia to blast efforts like those in Texas.
The denial of full and free and fair elections is the most un-American thing that any of us can imagine. The most undemocratic, the most unpatriotic.
The Texas bill also says local officials would be barred from sending unsolicited mail ballot applications, and it allows voters time off work to vote in a way to challenge a mail-in ballot rejection. Demonstrators waving Cuban flags and calling for change on the communist-run island blocked a major highway and staged other protests in the Miami area yesterday in support of the wave of demonstrations that rocked Cuba on Sunday. And Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas told Cubans who want to flee to the U.S. not to do it by boat illegally.
Allow me to be clear. If you take to the sea, you will not come to the United States.
Meanwhile, the protests in Cuba called for, among other things, an end to a 62-year-old dictatorship. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, says beyond serving as a milestone moment for the island nation, it marked the latest installment in the contest between Democrats and authoritarians. Jerry set this up.
Well, first of all, if you start with what happened in Cuba, it's a pretty remarkable thing. Over the weekend, you had hundreds and perhaps thousands of Cubans taking to the streets in 15 cities protesting the way the government was handling things in general, particularly the lack of COVID vaccinations, the lack of care for COVID patients, lack of a reliable food supply, but also kind of basically expressing greater dissatisfaction with the communist government of Cuba than you've seen publicly expressed in this level for years and years, if ever, you know, including a march at Communist Party headquarters in Havana. So this was a really unusual amount of unhappiness expressed publicly with this, what is, after all, a 62-year-old dictatorship. And I think that's interesting because it fits into a much broader context, which is a global struggle, really, between authoritarian regimes and democracy that's in full swing right now.
What struck me was a line in your story in which you said, certainly authoritarian regimes appear to be having a good run right now.
Well, that's true in individual cases and on a global scale. You know, the Freedom House, which is a nonpartisan organization that promotes freedom and democracies, has reported in recent months that freedom, as they define it across the globe, has been in decline for 15 straight years. The quote from their report is, the long democratic recession is deepening, which is to say the decline of democratic governments as a force on the world stage is underway and by some standards increasing. And, you know, you have this phenomenon showing up in some of the key relationships the U.S. has with adversaries around the world. In Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei has been the supreme leader for 32 years. Putin has been in power in Russia one way or the other for 22 years. Xi Jinping in China has not only been in power for 9 years, he has kind of arranged to become president for life of China. President Erdogan in Turkey, President Maduro in Venezuela have become complete authoritarians. And so those people seem to not only be in power, but to be secure in power, and it appears to have been a pretty good stretch for authoritarian governments here. And President Biden has talked about this, that the great struggle of our times is between democracies and authoritarianism. The things that you saw in Cuba, the things you're seeing in Hong Kong, where people are taking to the streets and objecting to Chinese repression, those are signs that maybe power of democracy can still prevail against this tide.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Cuba's Unrest Frames World's Big Struggle, Dictators versus Democracies. All right, so you rattled off leaders that have kind of created openings for themselves to stay in power for a long time. But are there cases where there are certain countries flipping from democracies to authoritarianism?
Well, I think if you look across, and the Freedom House has done this, if you look across Central Europe and Central Asia, you're seeing some examples of that. I think, you know, Hungary is a good example of a country that moved from a state of nascent democracy to a pretty authoritarian regime. You're seeing some of that in Poland. You're seeing it in the stands, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, places that after the demise of the Soviet Union looked as if they might be on the road to real democratic reform have kind of reversed course. And so to the extent, you know, there is this feeling that democracy is in retreat around the globe, it's because of what's happened in places like that. Again, though, in some places you have pushback, and I think Hong Kong stands out in that regard. And now Cuba is an interesting case study. You also have had a significant amount of ongoing unrest in Iran, where people are not happy with the clerical regime. But on the other hand, the dictators do what dictators do.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the spending spree by Democrats. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business. And be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Thanks for being with us. Democrats on the Senate Budget Committee have reached agreement on $3.5 trillion in spending for their broad health care and anti-poverty plan. They hope to touch education, climate change, child care, and a range of other issues while they have control of Washington. With the top line number set, lawmakers now need to craft details. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced the agreement last night after an hours-long meeting among White House officials and members of the committee. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
We're going to create millions of good-paid union jobs, rebuilding this country not only from a physical infrastructure, but dealing with the human needs of our people.
The price tag is short of the previous $6 trillion sought by progressives, but is roughly in line with the $4 trillion sought by the White House. It ultimately is expected to have tax increases. Democrats are pursuing a process tied to the budget called reconciliation to advance the bill through the evenly divided Senate without GOP support. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The COVID curve in the U.S. is rising again after months of decline, with the number of new cases per day doubling over the past 3 weeks, driven by the fast-spreading Delta variant, lagging vaccination rates, and 4th of July gatherings. The five states with the biggest two-week jump all have lower vaccination rates: Missouri, Arkansas, Nevada, Louisiana, and Utah. Republican Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri.
I'm not for mandatory vaccination, but I'm certainly doing everything I can to encourage voluntary vaccination.
Nationally, 55.6% of all Americans have received at least one shot.
Number two.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has rejected an emergency request to block the Biden administration's mask requirement for public travel. The request was brought by a man seeking to leave Florida by airplane, who said his anxiety disorder prevented him from wearing a mask.
Number three.
Texas Democrats who took off to Washington to block sweeping new election laws are urging Congress to quickly pass legislation protecting voting rights, while Republican Governor Greg Abbott threatened them with arrest the moment they return. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, President Biden called efforts to curtail voting accessibility un-American.
Time and again, we've weathered threats to the right to vote, free and fair elections. And each time, we found a way to overcome. That's what we must do today.
Back in Texas, Republicans authorized finding and bringing back more than 50 lawmakers under warrant of arrest if necessary. But because state troopers have no jurisdiction beyond Texas, the move has little practical effect. Cuban authorities have confirmed that one person died during demonstrations that have shaken the island in recent days by protesting over food shortages, high prices, and other grievances against the government. The 36-year-old died Monday during a clash between protesters and police on the outskirts of Havana. An unspecified number of people have been arrested and an unknown number of people have been injured.
Wow! Guerrero Jr. has doubled the lead.
Joe Buck with a call on Fox says Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of the Blue Jays sparked the American League to a 5-2 win over the National League in last night's MLB All-Star game. It was the eighth consecutive win for the AL.
Domination.
AL.
I think the Guerrero's home run is still traveling. It's last seen somewhere over Northern California.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Marcus by Goldman Sachs personal loans have no fees ever. Discover more at marcus.com. Now that trading apps have made it easy for investing newbies, Wall Street seems much more accessible, but be careful not to make big moves just because you heard something on the internet. Malika Mitra at Money.com has some of the biggest investing myths. Malika, help us out.
Sure. So I spoke to some financial advisors about common misconceptions that they hear from people about investing. So the first one is that investing is only for the stock, or is only for retirement. So, you know, a lot of people have 401ks from their employers and they think, okay, I'm investing for retirement. That's all I have to do. But if you have a ton of money sitting around in your checkings or savings account, you know, you're not doing yourself any favors for the other goals that you might have. Maybe in a few years you want to buy a car or you want to buy a house, and then you're not letting that compound interest work for you that could be working if you had invested that money in the stock market.
Mm. All right. So another one, too, a myth that it's a way to get rich quick. Certainly not the case. I mean, for the very, very lucky, I guess.
Exactly. And we're seeing a lot of people see those lucky people, you know, on the internet say, oh, I invested in GameStop and I got rich overnight. That's really hard to do. So there's this huge boom in meme stocks and cryptocurrencies. And people think, okay, I see people on the internet, on Reddit, on Twitter, getting rich quick. I can do that too. Not the case for most people. So it's much better to have a long term plan and stick with it, make sure it matches your goals and your risk allocation and all of that. That's a much better way to build wealth.
Mm. We're speaking with Malika Mitra, reporter at money.com. Her story is called Six Investing Myths That Are Costing You Money. All right. So one of the other ones I think that, you know, certainly was told to me, I think when I was probably in my 20s, was that a way to allocate your stocks percentage wise would be subtract your age from 100. But that's outdated now.
Yeah, people have been saying this one for a while, but I mean, people are living longer, and this isn't really going to help you kind of hedge against inflation over time. So some people say another approach is to subtract your age from 110. But an important thing to remember is that big blanket rules like this don't work for everyone. People make different amounts of money. They have different goals. You know, they have different years away from retirement. So it's much better to create a plan that's specific to you and stick to that.
Thanks, Malika. Malika Mitra at money.com. We'll have more myths next hour. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon.
Edgy, smart, bringing you what you need to know. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us and welcome into Wednesday, July 14. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Wildfires continue taxing Western firefighters. The Texas Senate has passed a voting bill. Senate Democrats agree to $3.5 trillion in spending. Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca researching how to modify their vaccines to reduce or eliminate the risk of rare blood clots. Inflation up 5.4% in June, fastest pace in 13 years. Italy wants cruise ships banned from Venice until new docks are built because of damaging waves. Clothing optional, it's National Nude Day, and the hospital experiencing a baby boom. That story in about 20 minutes. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is facing a daunting political task as he weighs his options for appointing Republicans to a special committee to investigate the Capitol attack of January 6th. It's a story by Mike Lillis, congressional reporter at The Hill. Mike, who will be on it?
13 people on the committee. This was a bill that passed through the House a few weeks ago. And 13 on the committee, and Nancy Pelosi has already appointed 8 of them. And the language of the bill says specifically that the remaining 5 will also be appointed by Pelosi, quote unquote, in consultation with the minority leader, and that's Kevin McCarthy of California. So he's the one facing a pretty big challenge right now. How do you pick these 5 people to put on this committee and win the approval of everybody in his caucus and win the approval of Nancy Pelosi, because she has veto power over his picks?
Wow. Okay. So explain the different things that he has to consider here, and perhaps some Republicans just don't want to be on that committee.
Right, for sure. And, you know, it's important to realize what Kevin McCarthy's goals are here. He has two goals over the next 2 years. It's no mystery. Number one, he wants to flip the House and take the and have the Republicans controlling the House again and have all the investigative power over the Biden administration, et cetera, all the perks that come with that. And two, he wants to be the next Speaker of the House. And to do that, he is going to have to not only obviously win these elections, but he also has to not alienate the various factions in his caucus, the moderates, the conservatives, the conservative firebrands. There are different groupings over there, and they all have different interests, and they have varying degrees of conservatism and varying degrees of how willing they have been to support Trump. And all of this to say, of course, Donald Trump is not in the White House, but he has not gone away. He has said very clearly that he wants to play kingmaker in these elections, in these midterm elections and beyond. He's been very active at rallies. He's off of Twitter, but he's still shooting out a lot of emails. He keeps these claims up that that the election was stolen, and a lot of people in the House agree with him, and so that is going to be this kind of the central focus of all of this select committee. Of course, is how did this happen? These are Trump supporters, puts them in a tough spot of supporting, a mob that entered the Capitol violently and injured more than 140 police officers. So, there's a lot of moving parts here, and McCarthy is going to try to thread a very delicate needle.
We're speaking with Mike Lillis, congressional reporter at The Hill. His piece is called McCarthy and GOP Face a Delicate Dance on the January 6th Committee. Is it possible that Mr. McCarthy deliberately picks, say, conservative House members for the committee, forcing Mrs. Pelosi to reject them in some sort of way, to embarrass her?
No, it's a great question, and I think it depends on which specific conservatives you're talking about. There are a group of conservative firebrands who are very willing, would love nothing more than to be on this committee and to have this prominent stage to defend the former president. These are the bomb throwers. These are the Matt Gaetzes, the Louis Gohmerts, the Lauren Boberts, the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world. And you can almost bet that if McCarthy, he's not expected to pick these people. One, because they've alienated him a little bit. They made his job a little bit difficult with some of the comments that they have made over the years. And so he's not expected to pick them. And if he did, Pelosi would probably not put them on the committee. She doesn't want this to devolve into a circus.
Yeah.
And that leaves another group of conservatives. These are, less controversial figures. I say that even though a lot of them voted to overturn the election results after the riot on January 6th and 7th. So they're controversial on the Democratic side of the aisle, but they have also a lot of experience in the partisan sport of combat and defending President Trump during the first impeachment and the second impeachment. And that group includes guys like Jim Jordan, Jim Banks, who's the head of the Republican Study Committee. Mike Johnson was part of the first impeachment, a lawyer, very smart, very articulate, and by all accounts did very well defending the president in the first impeachment. And then Elise Stefanik, who, of course, just replaced Liz Cheney. She's the third ranking House Republican now, big Trump defender, and also was a big force during the first impeachment and won a lot of accolades for her articulate defense of the president.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Lillis, congressional reporter at The Hill. Coming up next, where you can sample Flaming Hot Cheetos funnel cake. Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Hey, thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've got a couple of tasty food stories for you this morning. We start with French fries, where in honor of National French Fry Day yesterday, a New York City restaurant broke the record for the most expensive plate of fries ever. Be prepared to fork over $200 for this dish at the Serendipity 3 restaurant. The dish includes such high-end ingredients as Chipperbeck potatoes, Dom Perignon champagne, French champagne vinegar, cage-free goose fat from France, truffle salt, truffle oil, and several other fancy add-ins, including a topping of 23-carat edible gold dust.
What?
The restaurant, which just reopened on Friday after a lengthy closing due to the pandemic, said the $200 menu item is available by reservation.
Mm.
Was it the 23-carat gold dust that got you?
Yeah.
That seems like one of those things. You know, do you ever see sort of documentaries about when they were building the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building in New York back in the 30s, and they would sort of top each other by putting up a higher spire end? You know, the top of it, they just kind of kept pushing that up by a couple of feet each way. I feel like when you're getting close to getting the most expensive dish, we've seen this a few times before, they sprinkle on the 23-carat gold dust just to make sure that it's that's the most expensive dish.
Yeah. I think I'd bring like a small Ziploc bag and just try to scrape those flakes off, the gold flakes off of the fries into the Ziploc bag.
Right.
Make a little about...
A beeline to the jewelry store?
Yeah, what you're saying? Make back some of the $200 I paid for the fries.
Right. Yeah, I hear. I don't know if that adds anything to the flavor at all. Probably not.
By the way, I had never heard of Chipperbeck fries.
Chipperbeck potatoes.
Potatoes?
Yeah.
Well, apparently when fried, they absorb less oil.
Okay. Who wants that?
That's a good point.
Right. I mean,
and apparently, as their website says, a good source of potassium and vitamin C and are fat and cholesterol free.
Again, if I'm paying $200 for a plate of fries, I want all the fat.
And
all the oil. Just give me it all.
I'm not looking for a calorie deficit when I order fries.
Exactly.
Bring it on.
Exactly. I'll have my salad for lunch and I'll eat this for dinner. And if you're looking for more everyman food, you're in luck because state fair season is in full swing. Last week, we told you about the new foods coming to Indiana's fair, and now we have the list of new items Iowans will be able to sample during 11 days in August. 63 new items in all. Some of the more interesting items on the list include bacon fanny packs, the atomic strawberry shortcake, habanero bacon cotton candy, a flaming hot Cheetos funnel cake, and rattlesnake sausage. Meanwhile, attendees can sample them all and vote for their favorite fair foods, with the winners announced on August 18th.
Wow.
A lot of hot and sweet going on there.
Yeah.
The, you know, habanero bacon cotton candy.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the last one? The flaming hot Cheetos funnel cake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimate, right? Like one of the sweetest things you can think of combined with the hottest things you can think of.
You can't have that like in the middle of the day in July, though.
Right.
It's tough. It's hot.
You're outside. The sun's beating down on you. You know, stay hydrated, everyone, if you're gonna attempt any of these.
One that stood out to me in the link you sent me was island noodles with teriyaki chicken.
Right.
Soba noodles, a variety of 21 fresh vegetables.
Wow.
A secret island sauce and white meat teriyaki chicken breast. I mean, it comes in like a cup.
Again, that sounds like health food with the 23 different vegetables.
It's
really not, but it sounds like compared to these, that's health food.
How about a nice...
Not what I'm looking for when I go to the fair.
Right. How about with two beers?
Okay, sure. Right. You want to balance it out.
Sold! Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Thanks for being with us. U.S. News & World Report is out with its annual ranking of the best places to live in the U.S. Boulder, Colorado, number one. It's the second straight year the city earned that distinction. It's not the only city in the Centennial State to crack the top 10 either, with Colorado Springs coming in at number 6. The list was developed based on factors including the job market, quality of life, desirability, and net migration inflows. That helps to explain why the runners-up, Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina, and Huntsville, Alabama, rose far up the ranks to numbers 2 and 3 respectively. Both cities performed well in the analysis because of the availability of jobs in sectors that weren't as hard hit by COVID, such as technology and aerospace engineering. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the chamber's budget committee has reached an agreement to allot $3.5 trillion for a spending package that would complete President Biden's infrastructure plan.
Every major program that President Biden has asked us for is funded in a robust way.
The plan will fund a budget reconciliation package so Democrats can sidestep the need for GOP support and shield the funds from a filibuster. The budget would cover costs to expand Medicare, address climate change, child care, and education.
Number two.
Fierce wildfires in the Northwest are threatening American Indian tribal lands that already are struggling to conserve water in the face of a Western drought. Blazes in Oregon and Washington are among some 60 large active wildfires that have destroyed homes and burned close to 1 million acres in a dozen Western states.
Number three.
An Iranian intelligence officer and three alleged members of an Iranian intelligence network have been charged in Manhattan with plotting to kidnap a prominent Iranian opposition activist and writer in exile and take her back to Tehran. An indictment in Manhattan federal court alleges the plot was part of a wider plan to lure three individuals in Canada and a fifth person in the UK to Iran. A federal appeals court has ruled that prohibitions on selling handguns to Americans under 21 violates the Second Amendment, a legal victory for gun rights activists in a federal court. At issue is a law signed by President Lyndon Johnson in 1968 that banned the sale of handguns to people under 21 but permitted the sale of shotguns and rifles to those same people. A divided appeals court in Richmond ruled that the law was an arbitrary restriction. The decision is likely to be appealed and may eventually reach the Supreme Court. Thanks to a wobble in the moon's orbit and rising sea levels, every coast in the U.S. will face rapid increasing high tides that will start a decade of dramatic increases in flood numbers in the 2030s. That conclusion reached by NASA scientists has to do with the moon's orbit. The Crown tied with The Mandalorian for the most Emmy nominations with 24 apiece, but the Marvel Universe also got bragging rights with runner-up WandaVision. And then the top three categories, drama, comedy, and limited series broadcast network, scored only two nominations for the NBC drama This Is Us and ABC comedy Blackish.
Wow. All right. Thank you, Jen. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for joining us. A Texas hospital that averages about 16 deliveries a day said it experienced a pair of miniature baby booms with 107 babies born in a total of 91 hours. Andrews Women's Hospital at Baylor Scott & White All Saints Medical Center in Fort Worth said the first boom started June 24 when 52 babies were born in a 47-hour time period. The next boom, which started just a few days later on June 28, had 55 babies born in just 44 hours. In a news release, the medical center said while Andrews Women's Hospital is known as a high-volume delivery hospital, the influx in births was considered rare and exceptional. The baby boom beat the hospital's 2018 record when staff delivered 48 babies in 41 hours. Most popular names, by the way, Atlas and Daniel. For boys, for girls, it was Gianna. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.